Welcome to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. Let's get today's show started with your host and founder of the BD Academy, Rob Brown.
And welcome to the show. I'm delighted to have with me today Peter Fairchild from Smith & Williamson. Peter, hello to you.
Rob, very good morning to you, and thank you very much for the invitation to join you today.
The honour is ours, Peter, and for the benefit of people listening that may not have come across you, just tell us a bit about your background and your expertise.
Well, I talked to you, Rob, today as a very frustrated ex-sort of semi-pro footballer, rugby player. Didn't quite have the ability to make it on either field of play, but...
It's a loss to the sporting world, Peter.
Well, bless you for saying so. But I therefore sort of grew up in both sectors and became very familiar with the pitfalls and lures and troubles that professional sports people might get into. So when I couldn't cut it on the professional sporting field, then it was time to think about getting a proper job. So things like taxation and numbers I was always very comfortable with. So I thought, well, why don't we sort of turn what was originally a hobby and a passion into something that's connected with the job and actually try and help professional sports people in their endeavours. So I'm a tax partner at Smith & Williamson, but I also head up the sports, media and entertainment teams.
Is it actually as glamorous as it sounds?
I wish. There's lots of lonely journeys to the far-flung corners of the UK. Lots of times on the motorway, stuck in traffic jams, stuck on trains that are not moving because sports people deserve that we actually travel to them, whether that be at a football stadium, training ground, motorway service station, whatever.
Yeah.
So that part of it is very, very unglamorous.
What kind of things do you do for your clients, Peter?
The basic work that we would do would be all the usual personal tax and corporate tax compliance work, all their filings of accounts and tax returns with HM Revenue and Customs. But I think if you was to ask a lot of the guys that I act for what it is that I'm to them, I think a lot of them would probably say he's my big brother, in that I provide sort of guidance really on lifestyle matters as much as anything else. Because, for example, recently a senior player who's an ex-England international wanted to remortgage, and he just asked me to go along as a layperson because I'm not qualified in mortgages at all. But he just said, look, you financial people are very good at throwing acronyms at me and lots of technical jargon. I don't want to come across as being a bit silly and not understanding what's going on. But perhaps you can just pick up on some of that stuff and just translate it into words of one syllable that I can understand. And I just want to do the right thing, but I want to understand it as well.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're very much a trusted advisor and almost informal agent in having your client's best interest at heart.
Oh, very much so. When we go to meetings, clients' houses in particular, then once we've got the technical stuff that we've gone there to do out the way, for example, just reviewing and signing off tax returns and accounts, life in the world type conversations then get underway. And it's not unusual for a player to suddenly produce a box of post that's accumulated since my last visit, it simply doesn't understand.
Yeah.
And that's no criticism of the player because, there's a lot of technical stuff out there and it's a case of, can you help me with this? Can you help me with that? If it's not you, do you know someone who can? So another example is a player that I saw recently who was talking to me about his latest addition to his fleet of cars. Was then, this lovely motor though it was then sort of moaning about an extra set of insurance premiums, insurance documentation to go through. And I just said to him, well, look, we can get a fleet policy that covers all of your cars. So you've got one policy, one annual premium, and one set of documentation. Does that sound better? And he was like, didn't know you could do that.
Wow.
So simple things like this, which, to those of us that are sort of perhaps in the financial sector, it's second nature, but to a footballer whose, talent is on the field of play, then these sorts of things, are an irritation to them and they're just looking for some guidance.
Yeah, like any client, I guess. And it just shows the value, doesn't it, of not just being an accounting professional, but having a broad financial experience and commercial acumen to be able to bring in all these kind of bits of advice.
Absolutely right. Another example is where I saw a client recently who was with a wealth manager who had done some due diligence on the player and understood he was earning £120,000 a week. But in terms of the guy's investment portfolio, had he income geared and producing? And I was questioning that, saying, well, look, I'm sorry, but if you've got £120,000 of weekly income anyway, if you're telling me that you need more income from an investment portfolio, I suggest there's something going seriously badly wrong. So why don't we actually put the stop on more income coming through the door and actually turn it into something that's going to appreciate in capital value over the longer term? Because as a professional sports person, football or otherwise, you're going to be an awfully long time retired.
That's a really good point. And these professional sports people, we idolise them, we see them on the television all the time and we see them live. How different are they from mere mortals like us? Or are they just the same but with more money?
It's the same but add a few zeros to the income, really. But therefore, I think the temptations are greater because you've got more net income to spend, such that, you know, it's been well documented in the press about film schemes in the past. The football community has been particularly ripe for pickings. And the guys there, I think, have been lured into, for want of a better phrase sometimes, into something they didn't really understand.
Yeah.
It was always badged them as a tax whiz, not a real sort of business opportunity. And I've even got some players who are saying to me today, well, look, you know, I didn't realise that we was investing in a film as such. It's going to be produced and shot and sold and the film rights getting some income through. And I've got to pay tax on that in the future. That was never explained to me at the outset. So I think it is a case, Robbie, they are broadly the same as us, but because they got more net spendable income, then the temptations that are put in front of them are more varied.
Do you fear, Peter, for the amount of money some of these people have at such a young age?
Well, I think that's market forces, and I absolutely do not blame the player at all.
No.
I've got young 16, 17-year-olds who are sometimes earning £10,000-£15,000 a week already. But that's just what the nature of the beast is that's football. And if their particular club doesn't pay them that, then someone else will. But that needs to be carefully managed because they've probably gone from an academy contract where they're earning much more modest sums per week. And then all of a sudden they make one first team substitute appearance in the League Cup. Wham! You've just got this, you know, huge uplift in income. And therefore, you know, expectations need to be managed with the right advisors around the player at that crucial moment in time.
And we're predominantly talking about football, but you represent professional athletes from all kinds of disciplines, don't you?
Yes, that's correct. It is predominantly football simply because of the sheer number of players that are out there to be gained as clients. But we also act for people who are rugby union internationals. We've also got some Olympic medal winning athletes, clients in the sectors of cricket, in golf, tennis, and a couple of motor racing drivers as well.
And Smith and Williamson have a particular strength in this area. Without blowing your own trumpet, do clients say, get me Smith and Williamson, or do they say, get me Peter Fairchild?
I think at the end of the day, I can be a conduit to a lot more services than Peter Fairchild can provide, clearly. Yes, I'm a tax expert and big brother persona that I might have in terms of making sure the guys have got the right guidance. But I think where we are different is that we do have our own independent financial advisory arm. We've got a wealth management business as well. So typically the two or three key advisors that most clients, not just sports people, require, their tax advisor, their IFA, and their wealth management advisor, all under the same roof here. Not relying as the client on someone to take the helicopter view and connect all the dots by seeking advice at different firms. Yeah. So that's a key strength of ours.
And how have you seen the role of an accountant change over the years?
People talk about trusted advisor, but I think when you peel away the title and understand what that really means, and I think that's where accountants and possibly, you know, other professions as well, solicitors would come into this, I think, as well. If you get that close to the clients, which is why I like going to see clients on their home premises, because at home, the client probably feels at their most comfortable. They've probably got more documentation and information within reach than they would otherwise. And you actually get to meet husbands and wives, boyfriends, girlfriends, and understand the dynamic of the family setup a lot more.
Yeah.
And coming back to this trusted advisor point, you can then have conversations that are perhaps a little bit outside your sphere. So, for example, a young player that I was talking to recently who's a rugby international, very successful guy, and moving in to his first home with his girlfriend, who I also know pretty well from meeting with them together many times in the past. So therefore, the conversation about having something like a cohabitation agreement, which is not a tax matter, is clearly a legal and family law matter, is a concept that at least I can introduce to them and explain in layman's terms what it all means. But they both bought into that and said, well, great. Do you know someone who can supply that service?
It's a long way from just doing the personal tax returns or a bit of audit, isn't it? It's beyond compliance, totally.
Oh, very much so. These days, if you're set up to be nothing more or little more than just a compliance function or factory, then you know clients will typically look for more services than you can actually provide or look to provide. And yeah, I think if you take that view, Rob, then my experience and opinion will be that you'll lose clients quite quickly.
Mm. Smith & Williamson stands strong in the market in certain niches, particularly sport and leisure. What do you feel separates a good accounting firm from a great one?
The answer there is just having a regular dialogue with your clients. Now, this can take many forms. If I can just bridge slightly away from sports matters for the moment, I've got some entrepreneurial clients whereby in the past, perhaps they've come along and said, look, I've done this great bit of business and I've sold this particular manufacturing arm and I've realised £5 million from doing it. And isn't that fantastic? And as a tax advisor, sometimes you puff your cheeks out and go, oh, because had we known you was about to do that particular business transaction, we would maybe advise you to structure it in a different way. So therefore, it's getting along to clients to meet them, to say, look, not what's happening just now, but what's happening in the next 12 months, 3 years, 5 years, and let's track back in terms of what we can put into place to make that phase better. From a tax efficiency point of view, also add there that never let tax wag the dog. I mean, there are other interesting facts that may well be considered more important than tax, but at least you've got yourself a chance of having the dialogue. And with the entrepreneurial clients I've got, I typically have a quarterly or sometimes a six-monthly meeting with them. And the agenda, Rob, is a blank sheet of paper.
Yeah.
We say to them, look, just help us fill in the blanks and therefore we can gear extra advice to you that perhaps we wouldn't otherwise get a sniff of. So you're actually starting to structure the future and create how clients operate in the future rather than being totally reacting to what clients have already done.
You bring up an excellent point, Peter, about what separates the good firms from the great in terms of that proactivity. I spoke at an ICAW conference a few months ago. It was an audience of insolvency practitioners, and the overwhelming message was that they wished their clients would come to them 6-12 months earlier when things started to go wrong or when they were thinking about making changes, because you can do so much more for them.
That's very true. And as an accountant practice, we are blessed where we've got this ability to contact clients perhaps a little bit more regularly than other professions. You've already mentioned the tax compliance, which although is not the most exciting aspect of client work, it is an annual recurring requirement. Mm. You have to file a set of accounts or do a tax return. So therefore, we have to have that regular pattern of contact and dialogue with the clients.
Yeah.
Where perhaps the lawyers of this world are slightly at a disadvantage, and other advisors, because clients reach out to them if they're getting divorced, getting married, selling a business, and obviously those events are not as frequent.
Mm. You've given some examples already about the kind of financial advice young sports people need. Is there anything you'd add to that, Peter?
I think the one thing I would like people to take away, and it's something that I learned very early on, is that you do get a lot of people trying to get into football clubs to get access to the dressing room to sell whatever it is that they're going to sell.
Sure.
And it's very, very easy. I mean, I was a young man once, believe it or not, but you sort of look back and you think, well, I need to keep up with the Joneses, I need to keep up with my mates, otherwise I'm going to lose out on something that they're otherwise going to get. And sports people are competitive on the field, but in my experience, they're very equally competitive off the field in terms of not wanting to miss out. So I think in the past, clubs have perhaps let through the door too many people that are selling things that are not suitable for a young footballer's starting financial being, and not necessarily following the herd is just sit back, take advice from an independent person, that trusted advisor who can sort of see the wood for the trees.
Yeah. And financial education must play a big part for these young people with lots of money.
It's absolutely huge, Rob. At Smith & Williamson here, we have devised and conceived a program of education whereby we go into not just football academies, but also rugby and cricket, and just talk to them about such interesting things as tax and financial management, which is a little bit of a challenge, because picture the scene, the guys have had a hard morning's training.
Yeah.
It's been raining, it's cold. They've had their showers, they've had their lunch. The only thing that's stopping them from going home is blokes dressed in suits going into tax and IFA matters.
Yeah.
But we try and make it interactive. We show examples of well-established players that have actually gone bankrupt. Some of these guys will be their heroes, and they look around and say, well, How's John Barnes? How's David James? Well-established England football internationals. Yeah. How have they gone bankrupt? And then we explore in some depth, you know, how that might have happened, whether it's seeking the wrong advice, seeking no advice, burying your head in the sands and hoping it'll all go away. But overall, you're absolutely right. We've got an opportunity with the education to plug a bit of a gap, because as an office-based worker, I've got 40 years to save for my retirement. Whereas, you know, if you contrast that with any professional sports person, they've probably got 15 years at most.
Yeah, it's a good point.
To do the same thing. Mm. So therefore, their money's got to work a lot harder and a lot faster than mine. I take a couple of years out with bad investment advice, I've got time to recover. If you're a sports person, then, you know, if you've got that 10 to 15 year career to make things happen, you're going to make sure you get it right.
Peter, I want to ask you about a sensitive subject, mental health, because there's a huge amount of pressure on these players, both in the performance arena in front of big crowds and on television, but also financially, there's a huge amount of responsibility put on them. Do you think a player's financial stability or income is related to mental health?
The answer is undoubtedly, Rob. I sat with another ex-England international in the last 3 years. And he had about 12 months of his contract to run down. And, you know, he was earning £95,000 a week where he was. So that was all fantastic. Doing all the right sorts of things. He had investments. He had a pension, money in the bank, so a couple of investment properties. But I just put to him the question, like, what does retirement financially look like for you when you've stopped playing football? And he said, well, I'm not quite sure what you mean by that, Pete. And I said, well, how much income do you think you're going to need month to month to keep the style of life going that you've been used to? And he said, well, I think I might need £10,000 a month. So I said, well, you're talking to a tax guy now, so I've got to double that for tax.
Yeah.
The HMRC are going to want a slug of that. So we're now talking £20,000 a month. If we look back through your tax return, you've got a buy-to-let property portfolio and some investments that's currently producing about £7,000 a month.
Ouch.
That's all you got. And he was like, oh my goodness, no one's ever had this sort of conversation with me before. And he said, it shocked me. But you could tell at the time, Rob, he was in the mindset, don't really want to have this conversation because it's a difficult one. But then 2 days later, he phoned me to say, look, I've got myself and my wife on a conference call with you. We just wanted to say thank you because it's made us think. I'm now going to increase my media training. I'm going to invest in a couple of businesses. And that's great for us because even as a footballer, you know, it's all great whilst they're earning the money that they earn typically month to month. But once they've retired from the game and have gone into a new business, that still work for us because the new business is going to require tax returns and accounts prepared annually anyway. Point of this story is that this guy is now earning probably £35,000, £40,000 a month from his new business ventures off the back of being shocked 3 years ago. And I think mentally he's in a much better place than otherwise he might have been because he does like nice things. He likes, you know, the latest cars. He likes nice holidays. And that's all fine whilst you've got, you know, the weekly wage coming out to fund that. But when that disappears, spending patterns need to change quite dramatically.
There's presumably some problems mentally when they retire because they're not performing anymore. They've not got that adrenaline. They've not got that adulation. Do you see some challenges there?
Yes, it is a frequent conversation, that one, Rob. It's like a drug going out there and training every week and playing every week and being in that competitive environment every week. You're being a well-known face that's in the public eye. And then all of a sudden you've retired from the game that has frankly been your life for the last 30 plus years. And all of a sudden it's a case of what next?
Yeah.
And that is a transition that needs to be managed. And whether that's through extra training, retraining, or doing something different, or whether it's going into coaching, management, whatever it is, there does need to be a plan. Because as my dear old grandfather used to tell me, people don't plan to fail. They fail to plan.
Yeah. Of course. What do you think is one of the most misunderstood things about the work you do with your clients?
I think we touched on it a little bit earlier that it's all glamour. And it's all sort of, you know, fast cars and, glitzy nights out. Well, it's absolutely not, because if you talk to most of our clients, Rob, they will say, look, my day job, being on the field of play in front of 40,000 people week to week, I'm in the public eye so much to my financial position and what I'm doing business-wise, I want that completely underneath the radar as far as possible. because, you know, frankly, I don't want the world to know about it.
Yeah. You sound very passionate about what you do, Peter. What do you love most about it?
You're right. I am very passionate about it, very dedicated. If you talk to the team that I manage, you'll probably say he's a demanding chap as well. But, you know, I do want to make that difference to people's lives. One player that I was working with about 6 years ago has, you know, actually said to me, look, you have personally saved me from bankruptcy. He was actually one of the first people that's come along in my entire working life and said, no, you can't do this. I've been too used to yes people around me. And when I've said that I want to spend this and I want to do that, you've actually put the hammer down and said, I'm sorry, that is not happening. And here's why. And more importantly, here's what we're going to do instead of that. And I look back at it, and at the time I didn't like you very much. But actually, I look back now and think, do you know what? Another ex-England footballer being on the front pages of the newspaper saying I'm bankrupt is not really where I want to be at all. But now I've got some businesses running in the background. I've retired from the game. I'm very happy. I'm very comfortable. Nice home life. Nice family. And a lot of that, Pete, you said, is down to you.
Yeah.
You know, that gives you a nice glowy feeling. But I'm just here to really help people and not necessarily do everything for them, but just give them that guidance and steer them in the right direction. And where appropriate, pull in other experts to do the bits that we can't.
Yeah, that's very important, isn't it? Having a network of people you can turn to that have greater expertise than you.
Very much so, yes. You know, we do have quite a narrow band of other service providers, Rob, that have, you know, we've worked with in the past. And you know when you make the referral of a client to them what sort of service they're going to get. And it makes you good, frankly, because the client often comes back to say, do you know what, that was a cracking referral.
Yeah.
I've actually got really what I wanted to get, and thank you very much.
Yeah.
You really don't want it to be the other way around when the guy comes back and says, that was a waste of time, wasn't it?
Mm. Now, you're head of sport, media and entertainment. We've not really touched on the media and entertainment side, but presumably you represent clients that are performers in the world of acting and music and entertainment. Are they any different to the sports people or much the same?
They are very much in the same field, Rob, and a lot of the issues that we talked about covering sports people do impact in a very similar way on media and entertainment clients as well. You know, whether you've got a young pop star, whether you've got a young TV actor or actress, it's been an overnight sensation. And all of a sudden, you know, they've got other potential interested third parties lining up to get them to sponsor their product or endorse whatever it is they're doing. And all of a sudden, they've gone from, you know, pretty much obscurity, but very much in the public eye, and income has suddenly gone from, you know, very modest levels up to, you know, stratospherically high levels. It needs to be managed. So it's a very similar world.
Are you responsible, Peter, for developing this niche for Smith & Williamson?
It's certainly not all down to me. We've got a good team of people that, you know, are passionate about, you know, whether it's opera music, whether it's about TV and film. And they go along not just to fan festivals, but they immerse themselves in these subjects. So that actually, you know, casting directors, producers, songwriters. And, you know, it's almost a case of, like I did, they're turning what was perhaps once a hobby into something that, you know, shows demonstrable business for Smith & Williamson by not changing their behaviour very much.
Yeah. And that's a great example of how you develop a niche in the accounting world. You've got to know that world, haven't you?
You do. And I'm very conscious, actually, when I go and see clients, not to bring up, you know, how the match went at the weekend. But if the client wants to engage in that sort of dialogue, which typically they do, whether it's, you know, in the first 5 minutes or the parting shot before you leave their home after the meeting's concluded, you do need to be aware of, you know, what's been going on and talk about it knowledgeably.
Yeah. Now, you've been doing this a long time, Peter. You've got a few more years left. What do you think will be the legacy of Peter Fairchild?
Crikey. Good question again. He was the one that led by example. He showed passion in the sector or sectors in which he's worked, and he's made a bit of a difference. And what I mean by that is, you know, it goes back to the point we were discussing earlier about being proactive rather than reactive. And where players are perhaps going to transfer football clubs or rugby clubs, or even get involved in a sponsorship deal with Ray-Ban sunglasses, whoever it is, then I typically try to get involved to go along to those sorts of meetings.
Yeah.
And at first, I've had a little bit of pushback when I started this initiative a few years ago with the agent and the player saying, well, not really sure what role you're going to play. I explained that by saying, well, look, if the end user is saying our budget is, say, £80,000 a week and you're looking for £100,000 a week, you know, you might be able to negotiate, you know, to a position where you're both comfortable, but you may have to walk away. But having perhaps a tax advisor there to say we could structure it in this way and actually suit both sides, then, you know, we might start to bridge the gaps between where you're talking, and that might make a difference. So yeah, I've done that quite a bit where perhaps transfers may well have broken down, but actually we've been able to get things across the line because of my tax input.
Yeah. And how important is it having a supportive firm like Smith & Williamson behind you? Because you couldn't do this alone, could you?
No, you couldn't. No, I'm very grateful that the firm is the size it is and has the resources it does. You do need that blend of people that are, you know, outgoing and snapping up clients in the sector. But equally, you need the people that are going to be back at base doing all the work. Yeah. I mean, I oversee a lot of it. And a lot of the work gets routed through me, but does Peter actually do a lot of it? Answer no. Yeah. That's done by others, and you need a team for that. Otherwise, I would fail miserably.
People want to find out more about you and what you do and your team and have a conversation with you. What's the best way for them to reach you?
Well, I'm very happy for that question, Rob. And, you know, all the information about the sports group, Smith & Williamson, and my contact information is readily available on the Smith & Williamson website. So people are invited to give me a call or ping me an email about their situation with a client. And if we can, you know, make a difference, because people say to me, you know, what sort of minimum criteria for income and or wealth does a client need to have before Smith & Williamson will look at them?
Yeah.
I actually struggle to answer what might appear to be quite a straightforward question, because it's really where we can make a difference. So, you know, I've got lads who are at football clubs earning, you know, £2,000 a week, but their tax issues are relatively straightforward right now. We're making a seedling interest and investment in a client now, because if they become the next Wayne Rooney, David Beckham, you know, Alan Shearer type character, whoever it is,
sure.
Wow, we've got an absolutely crackerjack client from early doors. Mm-hmm. The team is hugely valuable to me, and I very much appreciate all the assistance that they provide.
Yeah, brilliant. What's the best bit of advice you've ever been given that's helped your career?
Lead by example. I quoted that earlier on. I'm passionate in that. It's all very good as a, you know, head of a group to be saying we should be doing this and we should be doing that. But for goodness sake, get out there and show how it's done. Mm. You know, practice what you preach, and in a show how the rest of the team can, you know, forge their own path. I'm not saying that my way is perfect, but, you know, just have that passion to get out there and make a difference. And, you know, hopefully, you know, bringing on the next leaders of Smith & Williamson who are going to be better than what I am.
Wow. Love that. Peter Fairchild, that's been world class. Thanks so much for your time today.
Rob, it's an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for having me on, and I enjoy talking to you today.
You've been listening to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. For show notes on today's and other episodes, plus some great blogs and resources to help accountants lead, sell, and perform at the highest levels, go to bdacademy.pro. Until next time, have a fantastic day.